That was my testimony. Thanks. Don't ever try to out-talk Jim. It's not gonna happen. So, and again, I got to tell you, this is my first outing, and I kind of feel like the opening act to the opening act of whatever artist or group that you ever love, because you know I've heard some really amazing speakers. So. They didn't save the best for last, just letting you know. So anyway, thanks again for allowing me to do this today. I really do feel fortunate for this opportunity. And I made a lot of presentations in my life, but certainly not anything this personal. And so hopefully I'll keep it together, but I probably won't. But we'll get through it. You know, I've been through a lot of revisions, and if you looked at my computer, and thank God for computers, because otherwise I'd have a lot more pages here. You know, I had a lot of titles, but I deemed it restlessness, because really, and thinking back, that's really what my life's been, and I'm finally getting to that point where it's changing. And as Jim mentioned, that's probably been the biggest change over the last couple of years. You know, many times, for those of you who watch the series Mad Men and you see him falling and, you know, the fall from grace, and many times I felt like I was that guy who was falling through the air. So luckily, I never really hit bottom, but there were a lot of bumps along the way, and it's so great to be here finally, and knowing that it's not finished. You know, listening to and talking to everyone in the stories that I've heard, you know, this weekend, it's going to continue, and you know, I can see retirement from here, and I'm thinking I'm kind of knowing what I can do, so I don't have to worry about sitting at home and watching daytime TV. So anyway, and I'm a very linear kind of thinking guy, so this is my attempt at not being linear, so bear with me. I graduated from Bowling Green State University in Bowling Green, Ohio. And thank God I met somebody from Cincinnati who actually knows the Interstate 75 corridor like I do. My degree was in applied engineering technology, and I came to Texas primarily because of jobs and the blizzard of 78. And so I started working with a company named Brown & Root. Those of you who've been around the area know Brown & Root. Probably the finest engineering construction company in the world at that time, and it was truly an amazing trip just coming to Texas and being from the Midwest and then coming to Texas. It was a cultural shock, especially Houston, but I fell in love. Not long after that, I fell in love with my first girlfriend in Texas. And probably made every mistake that you could possibly make in a marriage. So we'll weave that in and out as part of my journey. The restlessness I felt then was more career oriented, because even though I was an engineer, I really felt like I needed to be in sales. I found out my first sales job, I really didn't know how to sell. You have to ask for the sale, and I just didn't do that very well at the beginning. But that kind of became a life lesson too. You know, you got to ask for things. So a friend of mine recommended that I apply for a job with a company called Parker Hannifin. And I spent the next 31 years of my life traveling the world, moving up the ladder, so to speak, fighting politics, making some of the biggest acquisitions that they had ever made, which led to getting divorced, promoted, now remarried. Now I picked up two stepsons in the process. But things were really starting to spin out of control. There were just too many things going on, and I just found out that I really probably didn't have the capacity to do it all, but I wasn't going to admit defeat. That just wasn't going to happen. That's not me. But my job was my identity, and that was where things really... That's why I was spinning out of control. So it consumed most of my time. So not only was I restless, the unhappiness came with that. Soon I got divorced again. The business crashed in the downturn. I honestly got demoted, and I really began to question everything. The result, I started to listen to myself. And I knew that I probably wasn't going to retire, even though I tried it. I was going to look at my career differently, and everything was changing at that point in time. But again, it was tough. You're starting a new career out in your and with a new company and in your late 50s. And I know there's probably some people in here that have been through that. But again, that's when I started looking inward, and I finally really truly started thinking about me. There was a Northwest Bible Church had something called Between Jobs Ministry, and I learned of that through a company, Lee Hecht Harrison, that I was using, that my company actually paid for it, even after I said, you know, I want a package, I want to retire. And they said, yeah, well, my boss at the time said, you're not going to do that, so do this. So I really learned kind of how to find a job and how to find a job that you thought you wanted to do. And like I said, I heard about this called Between Jobs Ministry, so I went to that. And for the first time, I kind of heard people talking about God in a different way. And even though everyone was there to learn how to get a job, you know, the religious part of it that I obviously had been missing, and I knew I was missing it, was weaved into that. And so, you know, I kind of made a pact with myself, and I said, you know, it's going to be different this time. And as it worked about that time, Mr. Donnelly showed back up. So one of the things that in my new position with a company that I've been with almost 3 years, and Cy kind of talked about it, in that I decided I was going to focus on the people, and I was going to focus on my customers, and bring up the young guys now that work for me. Sometimes I really surprise myself in what I say, because I really have become that old dude. But I think it's working a lot better than the last time. So before Christ and before I really started listening, I grew up in a small town in the Midwest, Sidney, Ohio, right along that same corridor. I had two parents that loved each other and stayed married until death. Had a stay-at-home mom, a younger brother. My mom was the youngest of 15, so aunts, uncles, and cousins were everywhere. You know, I'd go to a school, and it was like a mafia. You know, I had no one really messed with me, because there were at least 10 or 12 people I was related to. So that came in handy at times. You know, my father's mother, my paternal grandmother, was always, you know, my go-to person, and she was the one who listened to me and really helped, I think, keep me out of the trouble that I ended up getting into, but probably not as bad, because I think she always taught me about, you know, having a conscience, which I think we all know is really the Holy Spirit talking to us. So, you know, I think back to that time, and I think about what kids go through now, and it really was idyllic. I guess I probably didn't realize at the time, but it truly was. My dad was in the former military, so we did learn, my brother and I both learned what it was going to be a good soldier. That included Sunday school, church, being baptized, you know, at the age of 12. The schools back then were different. I mean, you know, we did pray in school. We even had a teacher who had a mobile classroom that she would go from school to school, up, you know, through elementary, and we would learn about we'd all troop out of our classrooms and go to this little converted mobile home. And again, you know, when you're young, you just don't know how really special that is. But I think that helped me learn about the Bible. But again, I really wasn't listening to what the message was. So what we learned, that, you know, hard work was probably more important than spiritual training. We didn't have a lot of money, you know, beyond the basics. Father was a blue-collar guy. The underlying message there was, you know, you're going to have to take care of yourself. And that translated to me to, I got to get out. You know, I've got to get on my own. I've got to do this, whatever it is. And that's, I think, where the restlessness really began. There was always tension over money. That was the thing that my parents thought about the most. And I think that's what drove me for most of my adult life. I truly define success, and security on a material basis. And my faith took backseat to this. Family life was less of a priority. I just had to show everybody that I could be successful and I could make it on my own. And that really controlled me for a long, long time. And Jesus did not come, you know, to me in a flash or a response to a tragic event. My good friend Tracy, who I was dating after the divorces, gave me my study Bible, which, as Jim knows, I spent a lot of time reading and educating myself, and it was the perfect thing. And again, she gave it to me for Christmas, and at the time I can remember it was we'd gone to church a little bit, but it was really kind of a strange gift, and that was in 2013, and it took a little time before I actually started using it as a tool. Tracy had an interesting story in that she did have kind of a flash. She, her brother, she was supposed to be babysitting her brother, and she decided to take a break and go have a few drinks in a pub down the street. She lived in Chicago, and fire broke out, and her brother was killed in the fire. And you can imagine the shambles her life was. And as she says, in a small black church in Edwardsville, Illinois, which I'm sure Jim probably knows where that is, that's where she was saved. Jesus saved her from her guilt and her shame. And you could tell, when she told the story, just how deep in the depths of her despair that she was in. You know, and I listened to that. You know, and I still didn't get the message myself. I felt a flutter of recognition in what, you know, could be done for me if I accepted it. But I still wasn't there yet. But as I mentioned, I always did hear God's voice throughout my life. And I think he was trying to break in. You know, and obviously it's louder at some times than others. I mean, in times of grief, losing a loved one, the towers, you know, falling, career setbacks, divorces, and it's mostly in your grief than in your joy. But, you know, so the restlessness continued, and I found I really just didn't like myself. And I don't know how many of you guys have done that, but you know, when you finally figure out that you just don't like yourself, it's hard to take in anything else. So, you know, with that, you know, I didn't have children of my own. As I've talked to some of you, I've got stepsons and nieces. But during that time, you know, I was working long hours because I could avoid the issues that were happening at home. You know, coming into a house where somebody else's children are there, it's a challenge. And I love the guys. I love my boys, and they love me. But it was hard. You know, it's one thing when they come to you from the beginning, but when you walk in, there's a whole different set of pressure. So, you know, I hit it work. I just was fixing things, fixing other people. I wasn't really fixing myself. And I think my heart was extremely hard from all those pressures that were there. And that has been the biggest thing, and I've tried to do since then. So when you got a hard heart, it's hard to develop relationships. It's hard to have intimacies, and because you don't have it with God. And truly, you know, I look back so many times where I could have changed things, but for whatever reason, well, we know the reason, it just didn't happen. In Isaiah 41:10, you know, he says, "So do not fear, for I am with you. Be not dismayed. For I am your God, I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." And I read that, and I've read it several times. Maybe someday, Jim, I'll have it memorized. Another joke on memory verses. I'm trying, I really am. So I remember coming home from one of my many overseas business trips. I think that year I probably spent about 140 nights in hotel rooms. I remember that date, Friday, August the 8th, 2008. was the opening ceremony of the Chinese Olympics. And that was the night my ex said that, I don't think I love you anymore. That's when it changed. You know, then I became my journey at that time. I began to pray as I could back then, and I really worked hard to save my marriage. You know, I got off the road. That business trip, I think, was 2 weeks, and my flight and finally got home, I think, was 23 hours later. So you can imagine how good that that little discussion made you feel. But I worked really hard. Then I found out that, you know, she was having an affair. And, you know, I blame myself, rightly so, because what she did was wrong. But, you know, it's nothing that I hadn't done before, especially in my first marriage. And that's why I didn't like myself. Yeah, because I did things that I knew were wrong. So anyway, I did admit my sins. But when I moved out, I picked up that Bible. And finally, the process with me and God started. You take 6 months off because you're trying to get divorced and you want to do the right thing. And, you know, you look at the practical aspect. Well, and I don't want the attorneys to dig up anything on me, so you stay off social media and you do all those things that they tell you to do. And then I started online dating. And I know you younger guys, you know, it's been part of your life, but for us old dogs, that was different. It was really different. It was different than any dating that you'd ever done before. So initially, the bad behavior came back. And I probably don't have to go into details. I think we can all figure out what that was. But it didn't last very long. So I think, you know, as I was trying to bring God into my life, I did start thinking about relationships and trying to form deeper relationships. And so the online dating, I was probably the most non-serial dater of all the guys I knew that were using it. So I guess there was some improvement there. But really, what I really began to seek out was deeper relationships with my family and my friends. Although I did kind of wonder, it seemed like every time I dated a girl, her next relationship ended up, she got married. So we can read a lot into that, but it did seem kind of curious at the time. I was still in the darkness, though, and as in John 1:6, he says, yeah, so we are lying if we say we have fellowship with God, but go on living in spiritual darkness. We are not practicing the truth. And that truth was starting to ring through. And again, it just seemed like I was in a tug of war with myself. You know, for so many years, I felt like I needed to be accepted, whether or not it was within my wanting to be accepted or doing what it took to be accepted. And it really led me to too many decisions when I needed to set better priorities. So for you young guys, you know, do what Jim told me. And wisdom comes from the 10-10 rule. When you're trying to make a decision, you know, think how it's going to impact you in the next 10 minutes, the next 10 months, and then the next 10 years. If you do that, I think it'll help. John 3:16, in my phrasing, kind of went like this. You know, God loved us so much, he gave us his son, his greatest gift. And all he's asking for us to do is just believe in him and believe in this promise. And about that time is when Jim came out. He gave you the timing, so I won't go through that. I think I embraced the process pretty quickly. I'm a pretty analytical person, as Jim will definitely tell you. And I think I really surprised myself how the Timothy process has worked. I found out I'm not nearly as slow as Jim's led me to believe. And I won't get through the timeline, but it really was, I guess I can thank the Astros and our 2017 World Series championship, because that seemed to all line up. And God, obviously, I was in a time of celebration, and it just seemed like it was going to continue. So what Jim didn't tell you is I made my commitment and accepted Jesus in January of 2018. And yes, it was in the Denny's on Willcrest. So as we all know, that's one of our favorite places. And I finally, at that point in time, the journey was starting. At that time, I knew what I needed to do. And we have talked to some of you guys about our Timothy books, and I really use them as references, because I've written so many things, and to go back and listen, or to read what I read. And I read in the second book, in chapter 6, where, you know, what were those words that you wrote down when you did accept Jesus? And I said, my life seems empty. My path is not clear. Guilt rules my self-talk. And I cannot find forgiveness for my past sins. I need help. I need light. I need to love myself. I need God. And wow. I really don't know why I get so emotional, because this is a happy time. Life after Christ has led me to ways in my life like being here. I'm striving for more balance, but balance is a misnomer. You know, God needs to be, the other stuff will work out. Life with God, you know, my focus has changed from restlessness that I've talked about, and unhappiness, to peace, hope, and honesty. It's changed from what I need to what I can give. And I said, you know, I spent time, you know, solving problems and trying to give, but I don't think I was giving the right thing. So what's changed me since then? Prayer truly does unlock faith. There's no substitute for it. And our faith in Jesus Christ is our path to eternal life. You know, Sy's brought that up. It's true. You know, Jim got me to the quiet time that I do early in the morning. Not as early as Jim, but pretty early for most normal people. And it does allow me to soften my heart. As Luke wrote in chapter 5, 36 to 39, new wine and old wineskins won't work. You really need a new heart. Your heart's got to be pliable, or you won't be able to accept the messages that God is sending you. What else? I've changed my self-talk to being, as I put this, and I'm not sure where these words came, but it sounded pretty good, a passive receptacle for negativity, beggarly, and impure streams of thought. I never thought I'd, you know, stand up in front of a group of people and talk about, you know, pornography, but I can tell I'm not the only guy here that truly that probably impacted my second marriage more than anything else. You know, the 90s were bad. Every other email I opened up, someone was sending me something, and it got out of control. That's been a tough fight. And hearing Chris and the issues that you had, I suffered a lot of the same things that you did. Of all the books, you know, that I've read in the Bible, I think probably the Book of Psalms interests me the most, because it covers such a wide range of topics, and the stories are amazing. But the very first verse talks of life's two roads. Oh, the joys of those who do not follow the advice of the wicked, or stand around with sinners, or join with mockers. And I tied that to the pornography thing, and I think about that if I ever feel myself slipping. You know, God judges people on the basis of their faith in Him and their response to His will. There really are only two paths of life. It's God's way of obedience or the way of destruction. And in our choices will determine, you know, how we're going to spend that eternity. And Jim Bro continues to remind me that, you know, it's pretty simple. Eternity is a long time. God brought me him to me with a message of hope. And his patience with me, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Again, I still think I was moving slower than most people when I wrote this, so Jim, I'm not going as slow as I thought. But the pace is such that instead of rushing through things, which I have a tendency to do with, you know, spreadsheets and work things and PowerPoint presentations and, you know, give me 3 slides, don't give me, you know, 30 slides. This pace that I'm on truly has worked for me. And I think I'm getting to stage 4 where, you know, I might be good enough to be a disciple, to take on a Timothy. I found a great verse in Luke. You know, students are not greater than their teacher, but the student who is fully trained can become like a teacher. So I do hope that I'm half as good as Jim, and certainly, you know, many of the guys that I've met here, you know, in the 12, 14 hours that we've been together. You know, and just to leave you with this, heaven is not a reward. It is a gift. The reward of faith is for God to say to you, I am not ashamed to be called your God. So may God bless you all. Merry Christmas. And let's hope for that our next decade, which is going to be here soon, is one of peace. So thanks, guys. I appreciate the time.